Start your engine!
From the dirt tracks to the brickyard, Daytona to Homestead, Jackson and Thomas are covering it all. Welcome to the Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com.
And we are coming up to Homestead in a couple of weeks, man. This year is just flying right by at Sports Fan Radio 1330 and SportsFanRockford.com. The Racing Rundown back on the air. And if you didn't catch the podcast, we've got you covered on a Saturday morning until 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm Jackson. Alongside here, my good buddy and fellow racing aficionado who goes by the name of Thomas Gomez. How's it going?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, man. Glad to be back here once again talking about a lot of NASCAR this week. Some big news when it comes to our neighbor state to the east, as well as the IndyCar circuit. We've got a little bit of F1 that I want to bring up, but of course, most of this is about the local tracks and NASCAR, and since the local season is unfortunately
over,
frozen at this point.
Frozen. I like that. That's better.
Can you believe we're getting this kind of weather already?
No, I don't like it.
Like Halloween, they had all the snow, and it's just like, what? We're doing this. So we're in it now. We're in it now.
No turning back.
I've got a girlfriend who wrecked a car on black ice.
Oh, no.
I've got a family member or brother-in-law who wrecked a car going into another one. And everybody's okay.
Everybody's okay.
But there's some cars that need to be repaired or junked at this point. And so drive safe when you're out there. Thankfully, we don't have a lot of snow on the ground this weekend. We're not expecting a whole bunch. So, Thomas, let's go to a warmer place.
Okay.
Let's just get out of here. Let's just get out of here and put ourselves in the mind of Texas Motor Speedway.
Okay.
This All past right. race and Kevin Harvick taking that victory down. Did you enjoy the 500-mile race at Texas?
I enjoyed stage one. Stage one was interesting. There was a lot of cautions. But the rest of the race was pretty quiet and typical for what I thought Texas was. But I have to say, though, you do have bragging rights because you called it with Harvick last weekend.
Did I?
You did.
Yeah. That's good. Who did we have? I didn't remember going back to look at our pick three.
I have no idea. I just know that you had Harvick.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And that's good. Yeah. It was about time for Kevin Harvick to, do something. He kind of owns the Texas track. He kind of owns Phoenix, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show as well. But I got a feeling somebody else is going to be winning this next upcoming race. However, Kevin Harvick becomes the second driver to punch his tickets into Homestead for the Championship Four. He goes alongside Martin Truex Jr., and there's six drivers trying to fill out the remaining two spots. Things are going to get a little bit interesting. And when it comes to enjoying that race in Texas leading up to the Kevin Harvick victory, 500 miles seems long.
It was a long race.
It was almost 4 hours. And a mile and a half track where not a bunch typically happens. You mentioned the traffic or the traction compound going up. And I like that they put that on there because it gave a little wrinkle to the racetrack, but it only Yeah, well,
everybody had problems with that traction compound.
A couple of them simultaneously, too. Who were the two that spun out at the same time?
Keselowski and Martin, or not Martin Truex, Ricky Stenhouse.
Amazing. Like amazing.
The exact same spin out.
It's like they planned it.
Yep.
It was synchronized. It was amazing. But 500 miles on this race, you're going to put a traction compound down, and it took a whole stage, more than a whole stage, to really get this thing settled in. So it was chaotic at the very beginning.
Very chaotic. They actually broke a new record. It was six cautions for stage one, the most of any stage in all of stage racing in the last 2 years.
There was that many cautions in
stage They broke stage a new one? Record. Six cautions in one stage.
And they're not even counting the yellow flag laps at the beginning, like the other stages call it a caution.
Right.
Right?
Not including competition cautions or anything like that. Just pure accident or track-related activity.
Well, it really hurt a couple of playoff drivers, specifically Denny Hamlin, who took a dive through the grass. Okay, you're giving me that look. I don't like the fact that Denny Hamlin wrecked and that he's so far down in the standings now, because you know he's going to probably come up and do well in Phoenix. It would be...
Use your words.
Some kind of law against having the best driver in the entire series this entire year. Denny Hamlin's been the best this season, right?
He has, yeah.
If he doesn't go to the Championship Four, what the hell?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You got to have the best guy in. That would only make sense. And so it sucked to see him spin out with that traction compound. They had the turf there. But then there was this little lip right before the concrete as he was kind of going sideways through this thing. And then, boom, he hit that lip and a bunch of grass came up, it ruined his splitter, and then he started kind of bouncing back and forth. His splitter was completely fried at that point. He had a finish somewhere in the 30s, I believe, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Wasn't a good day for Denny Hamlin. 28th is what he ended up finishing. Actually better than Chase Elliott, who's also having a rough
Speaking of which, I did not expect to see him crash out again early in the race. You know, he had a horrible day at Martinsville, having an issue, and then at Texas to spin or to hit the wall on lap 9.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not having a good luck. He is so far out of it. He's in a must-win situation going into Phoenix.
78 points down. He almost needs 2 points or 2 races worth of points to try to make up ground on Joey Logano, who's currently sitting fourth right now. But Chase Elliott's had a big struggle. Denny Hamlin looked fine.
He did.
In Martinsville, he got a top 5. He had 37 playoff points coming into this round. He should have been okay, right?
Yep. Nope. Now he is out.
Traction compound. And it put him right into the... Put him right into the infield there. You wanted to talk about the turf. The turf has come up a couple of times, I think, throughout the course of this year when we've been together. But let's just set the record straight on this thing.
Okay.
Your question about the turf?
Yeah, so it was one of the things on that the announcers talked about during the race was, should turf be at every track? Because I think it's only at Charlotte and Phoenix.
Is that it? Just those couple?
There's only a handful of them that have the turf.
Hmm.
So the debate was, you know, after they see Denny Hamlin's car go a little airborne there. They're thinking, you know, well, there should be turf at every track. You know, it's 2019. Why are we still waiting on this? It's safer for the cars. I mean, look at Charlotte. They just kind of skid right across it. No damage whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, like, my opinion, I think that they should do it. I mean, it's not a lot of that they're replacing. It's just a little infield stretch in the beginning. You can still paint it, do whatever you want to it.
I'm with you.
And it makes it safer for the cars. They can get back out on the track rather than, you know, if you hit, you know, wrong, I don't know, pothole or something, you know, your car's destroyed.
Yeah. And that's what happened to Hamlin there. It sucks because people go there to watch Hamlin do well. And when he's gone in stage one already, because some tracks have turf and other tracks don't. And because some tracks use a traction compound and the other ones don't. I mean, that's just kind of an element thing that got to him. And yeah, everybody's racing on the same track. You got to be careful. No one wants to slide through the infield, but you're wrecking the playoffs at this point.
Yeah.
And so it kind of did for the 11 car. And maybe he'll rebound coming up in this next week, but I'm with you. There's got to be some kind of turf, some uniformity between the tracks, at least in that sense.
Yeah, it makes it interesting. Yes, yeah.
You could switch the parameters. You could switch something from a mile and a half to a mile to 2 miles. You could make it a super speedway or a short track, whatever. Put gravel on the damn thing. I don't care if everybody is used to driving on it. But when it comes to being off the track, I don't want you to lose just because you took a ride through some pretty grass.
Right.
Put some turf. Mm-hmm. Might even look better on TV for the people that don't have 4K.
Yeah, and you don't have to cut it. You don't have to worry about cutting the grass, making sure the lines are perfect or
you
anything.
Could save some money from people who have to go and cut that grass. They could help out with concessions or something like that.
See, it's cheaper in the long run.
I got to tell you, Thomas, there was a Formula One race about 3 hours south of the...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they had one in America. They had one during normal daylight hours over here. You didn't have to watch it overnight. There were over 100,000 people at that race.
I'm sorry, 100,000?
More than 100. I think the total was 111,000 something.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
They went downstate and down I-35 in Texas, about 3 hours away from where Texas Motor Speedway was. Now, you saw the crowd at Texas Motor Speedway. It wasn't...
There was a crowd?
Wasn't good. Was not good. It was easy to go to the bathroom if you needed to in a stage break. The Formula One race took 94 minutes to complete.
The entire race took 94 minutes?
A lot of the Formula One races, they take less than 2 hours.
And we have a cup race that takes four hours.
3 hours and 45 minutes is what this thing was clocked in at. 500 miles. And I get it. When you're in the playoffs, you want to put these drivers through the ringer. You want to make it more like an endurance challenge. But at some point, people are going to get bored.
Mm-hmm.
I like the look of Texas. I like how they put the carousel, the carnival type thing.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Yeah.
They put some stuff up there to make it look pretty in the shots, and it looked cool on TV. But 500 miles of that, dude. By the time they started, it was daylight. By the time they ended and they were doing interviews, it was nighttime. Make it 300. Can you do that? Just give me a couple of sprints.
I like that. You could split it up 100 each stage, you know?
Yeah. Part of the reason why people kind of get tired of baseball, because there's not a lot going on. Well, when we're running single file in a mile and a half track, the restarts look great, sure. But once that traction compound wore away, I mean, that whole third stage, I was trying.
Trying, but you couldn't do it. You know, I saw a lot of people on Twitter talking about this, because I'm only really on Twitter on race day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are comparing this to the Coke 600 because the Coke 600 was, you know, 100 miles longer.
Yeah.
They're like, this race is so long. And they're like, don't forget the Coke 600 was 2 hours longer than this one. It's like, don't forget about that. It was like an hour and 50 minutes or something like that.
Is that right?
It was almost 6 hours, I thought. It's like, it's Texas may have been a lot of long green flag runs, but that, you know, it just makes it seem like it's a longer race than what it actually was.
Well, by the time we got to the second stage, it was already about 2 hours in, it felt like, just because of all the wrecks and all the accidents and everything. So I don't know. I'm an advocate of when they turn this 2021 thing around, they got to take a good hard look at trying to make this race, trying to make some of these races a little bit lesser. I mean, hell, we're going to Phoenix, which calls itself the Can-Am 500, but it's only 312 laps, 312 miles. It's 500 kilometers. Cool. Make it a kilometers race. I'm up for that. We don't use the metric system, but you can jimmy your way into making a sponsor happy out of this deal, and it makes it sound bigger than what it really is. Just something for them to look at going forward, I feel. But I did notice in between when I was looking at my phone and looking back up at the screen in the third stage, was that the 10 car of Eric Almirola up there?
Uh-huh. I wrote that down in my notes too. It was impressive to see him up there. Kind of surprised me.
I'm so happy.
Uh-huh.
After picking him all year long to do well, he shows up.
You've literally been picking him since day one. I vividly remember you picking him for the Daytona 500.
He looked good at Chicagoland last year and a couple other racetracks, the mile and a halfs. Stewart Haas had a much better year in 2018 than they have so far in 2019. Kevin Harvick, you know, aside. But I just thought that Almirola was going to take that next step, and it's been a down year for him. It's cool that he at least gets something finally to go into the offseason here and feeling good about it. Maybe this can help give him a little bit of positive momentum going into the offseason as they recalibrate things for their team and their whole entire program. But Almirola was leading Harvick. And what I was thinking was, if Almirola's winning at the end of this race and Harvick's right behind him, if you're Eric Almirola, do you let Harvick go by?
No. You're racing for a win. Yeah. I like to see chaos. I'm that person. I want to see a non-playoff driver win and then kind of screw everything up, make it harder for everybody else, and make it all come down to the points and strategy.
We don't have a lot of non-playoff drivers winning the playoff races.
No, we don't.
Do you wish we had more?
Kind of. I'm a rooter for the underdogs. I want to see the weird things happen.
Yeah. Especially when it's a three-race round and you've got two guys already that are in, and so you're trying to fill two spots going forward, for example. Like, that's tough.
It is.
Be cool to see an Alex Bowman who finished, I think, sixth. Be cool to see Alex Bowman win another one here and just say, you know what? I'm still here, guys.
Yep.
You look out for me next year.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Harvick and Childers, they haven't made the championship for one time. This is another year where even Kevin Harvick after the race, he said, I'm surprised to make Homestead, to be dead honest with you. He has not won a mile and a half race this year until Texas just now.
Well, he hasn't had a great season.
It's been so up and down with him.
Yeah.
It was rough for the whole Stewart Haas racing program for maybe the first third of the season. Harvick started winning. Harvick went nuts. Then we didn't really hear from him again for a little while, but he accumulated so many playoff points with good finishes that you didn't really have to worry about him until this round when he started in the negatives, and I don't remember the last time that happened. He has now tied one other driver for 14th all-time in wins with 49. Do you know who that driver is?
That is his boss, Tony Stewart.
It's fitting that Tony Stewart is 14th, right?
It is. I did kind of find that ironic.
It was a rough day for Hamlin. It was a good day for Harvick. Kyle Larson had an issue. He was running fourth. He was doing pretty well. And then he went to go and pit, got four tires along with some other drivers, the Killer Bees and Byron Bush and Boyer. And then a caution came out for Bubba Wallace.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me what happened there?
Sure. Bubba Wallace intentionally spun his car. Period. End of story. If you watch the video of that replay of that caution, right, you can see Bubba Wallace clearly make two attempts at spinning out his car. First time it didn't work, second time it did, and that was just so NASCAR could throw the yellow flag. And you can't call me bitter because Kyle Larson went a lap down and ruined his chances of winning. I was upset about this before I even figured that out. I'm like, what is Bubba doing? And then I'm like, wait, Larson just pit. What happens to him? That was my second thought. But yeah, it was clear as day that Bubba intentionally spun the car, but NASCAR didn't see it that way.
Was he three laps down at that point? He was a couple laps down, wasn't he?
Sure. I honestly don't remember.
He certainly wasn't in contention.
No, but he had a tire going down, so.
So you turn the car right and then left?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's what he's saying anyway. Yep. That's what Richard Petty Motorsports tweeted out, was a picture of the tire, and it had a gigantic gash right through the center of it. I mean, it was definitely ravaged at that point. But what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this?
But did the spin make that worse?
Could have.
Make that tire worse, you know?
Could have. A razor blade could have as well. Okay. I'm not saying that that's what they did.
Yeah. I just thought it was ironic that, you know, after this caution happens and after the race is over, Richard Petty Motorsports posts a picture of the tire, and it's like, really? You had to do that? Like,
in their defense, with it did look like it was daylight when they took the picture. So
yeah.
In their defense, we have to give them that. But Bubba Wallace right now, there was a link that you sent me about that for further information from NBCSports.com. And a 13-year-old was calling the show after the fact saying, why did Bubba Wallace intentionally spin himself? And then it was, I think it was AJ Allmendinger was talking, and he's just like, well, I'm not going to say that he did that. It's a 13-year-old calling. He could see it. He knows what's going on.
Yeah, smart kid. He could see it.
I couldn't find any Bubba Wallace quotes on this.
No.
They just told him not to?
Sure. Yep. How odd, huh? But here's the thing. With everyone who was calling in, like that 13-year-old called in to talk about Bubba spinning, then came up the debate of Logano did the same thing at Martinsville, which I had to go back and rewatch. I'm like, I don't remember what you're talking about. But after the Hamlin incident, apparently Logano did the same thing. He kind of forced his car to spin so the NASCAR would throw the yellow so he could go to pit. Did you see the same thing?
I did. I saw it. Yeah. At the time.
Did you see it at the time or at the, you know, watching the replay?
After the fact.
Okay.
When people were calling it out. I wasn't paying attention to it as closely as other people were who were on Twitter, and thankful for Twitter that they can point this kind of stuff out. It's Bush League. Right?
Sure.
It's just stop doing it. There should be a penalty for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like hitting reset on the PlayStation because you hit the wall and now you're in last place.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
I have done that.
Well, I mean, if you're in a competitive race, right?
Me playing PlayStation, that's competitive, okay?
Okay. If there's some tournament that you and I are involved in with NASCAR Heat 4, and we've got $50 on the line. I'm just throwing an arbitrary number out there.
All right.
And you intentionally throw the caution flag. I'm going to say, come on. Like, come on. Don't do that. And that's what Logano did last week. Sure. And that's what Bubba Wallace did here. It's just surprising to me. I mean, I can get why Logano would want to do that. But Bubba Wallace wasn't in contention. That's weird. Just drive around the track and go in the pits one more time. I mean, how much more...
You just had to make another lap till you get to pit road.
How many more positions do you have to lose for it to matter? If you're running in the 20s, you've got a goal that you want to hit, right? Okay, you're not going to hit it. So you're going to throw a caution on everybody? I would hope that he didn't intentionally do it and there was something wrong with his car. And I do somewhat believe that only the driver knows for sure.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But looking at that thing that you sent me and looking at it in real time, I could say I'm fairly confident that he probably spun himself on purpose, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see the driver's point of view on this. You know, if Bubba was slowed down like he was on the on the apron and really slowed down. If NASCAR couldn't see that and they weren't throwing the caution because the driver was off the pace, I can see him why he would throw, you know, spin his car out so NASCAR would be forced to throw the caution. Still doesn't make it right, though, just because NASCAR didn't see it.
So you're saying that if he spun the first time accidentally and a tire was going down, NASCAR didn't throw a flag, and so then he tried to do it again purposely to get a flag thrown? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that's what happened. I can see...
No, I know, but if that were the case, like, he didn't intentionally spin the first time. The second time he did it because NASCAR wasn't doing anything and he didn't want to lose a bunch of spots?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. Then I can see that. But even still, if you're a non-playoff driver, I think that that's something that should have a fine.
Yeah.
There should be something that gets deducted. There should be a punishment that gets handed out for that.
I agree that there should be something, but I don't know. I'm wishy-washy with this, I guess. I see NASCAR's point of view, and it's like, it's kind of hard to police that because, like you said, only the driver really knows what happened.
Right.
You know, did they purposely, you know, spin their car? But if you're NASCAR, how do you enforce something like that? If, you know, because you could call, say, someone spun out and be like, oh, that was intentional. You're going to have to serve this penalty when, in fact, they didn't. It was a pure accident. They didn't mean to. I can see it kind of going back and forth being a hotter topic in the future.
Is it a black flag, maybe?
See, I don't know. I don't know what to do in this situation.
Because a black flag would hurt worse at a Bristol or a Martinsville than it would at a Daytona. Well,
black flag hurts, period.
It does. It wouldn't hurt as much at Texas as it would in Bristol, perhaps. because then maybe you are the lucky dog when you come out from that black flag.
True.
Maybe you can find your way back on. You could Denny Hamlin the whole thing and then find your way a lap down and then come back and, you know, potentially win if you have a good enough car.
Right.
Larson was angry about it because it did put him a lap down. And he had a right to be angry because, of course, he is a playoff driver. Bubba Wallace is not. But then Blunt Larson attacks mid-speech, mid-monologue. And he says, well, I've done this before. And a lot of other drivers have, too. But it doesn't make it right.
Yep.
Well, that's not probably the best thing to say if you're trying to
get
something.
Doesn't help your defense at all. No. You can't come out and say, well, I've done it.
He did it in Eldora, he said. In 2016, they did black flag him, I think. They made him do a pass-through. He ended up winning that race in 2016. So it didn't really hurt him that much.
Right. Yeah, you can't just come out and say, yeah, I've done it.
I'm happy to move forward from Texas this week. It wasn't one of the better races this year. And of course, if you have 36 weeks of racing, there's going to be that from time to time here. You just try to minimize it. Phoenix is up next, and we'll talk about Phoenix. We'll give our pick three in the third segment of the show here, but I just want to recap the points real quick. We'll do it one more time. Who do we have in right now?
Right now, we have Martin Truex Jr. and Kevin Harvick in with a win. Kyle Busch in by 22 points and Logano in by 20. So if, you know, Homestead was tomorrow, that would be what we have.
Okay. And then below that is Denny Hamlin down 20. Kyle Larson and Blaney down 23. I'll tell you, there's a hell of a race for 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah.
And you want to move that cut line a little bit lower, that could be really interesting. And then there's, of course,
Elliott down by 78.
Jeez.
Yeah. Not looking too great for him.
It's been so bad for him this round. But it's good that he made it in the round of 8. He hasn't done that yet. Has he done that?
I don't think he did
that last year.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, he was going to be an underdog anyway. Chevy's so far behind Gibbs this year that it's...
Yeah.
So we will recap these one more time. We'll talk the pick three. We'll tell you more about Phoenix and our observations on what's going to happen. But up next, one of the biggest deals in all of racing history. I'll call it that. I don't think that's hyperbole.
No.
One of the biggest deals in racing history happened earlier this week. You've heard about it by now since you're listening to this program. You know we're going to be talking about Roger Penske and exactly what's happening with him. NTT IndyCar and IMS coming up next on the Racing Rundown. He's Thomas Gomez. I'm Jackson. And we're back after this.
The Racing Rundown on Sports Fan Radio 1330.